live to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, and it's episode 239, where we're talking with Peter Moosman, which, according to this press release, is local gay Mormon, Peter Moosman.
Yeah, it's actually Moosman.
Oh, Mo.
I won't.
Well, you know what? Spell it. Spell it like Moosman, then.
Right? It looks like Moosman. It's M-O-O-S-M-A-N.
So why is it not? Why, help me out here.
Right?
We came over from Ellis Island, and we said...
Yeah, I mean, it's a little better than it started because it used to have two N's at the end, but they dropped one of the N's. They should have dropped one of the O's as well, but they didn't. So
Peter Moosman.
Moosman, like Moses.
Yeah. Okay. Not at all spelled like that. I love the introduction, though. He's a local gay Mormon.
Yeah, as opposed to a foreign one.
Or international. International, yeah. That's what you should aspire to.
Right, yeah.
I got this press release, and I want to read it, obviously, to serve as an introduction. Peter Moosman, not Moosman, don't be confused by reading this, set up a conversation booth on Main Street in downtown Salt Lake City and invited people to discuss the experience of LGBTQ plus people in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Utah native, Peter invited folks to come down and to step in or to sit down in his makeshift living room. You did this on the 15th of July, so just this last weekend.
Yep.
And then you're doing it again on the 19th of August. It's on Main Street just outside of City Creek Mall. Probably got to be on public property, I'm guessing, and you'll get into all that stuff. So let's get to know you a little bit, Peter. You said you're from here, Utah native, so whereabouts?
Yeah, so born and raised in South Davis County, so went to Woods Cross High School. I'm a Wildcat, and just lived just in North Salt Lake. Moved to Salt Lake City a couple years ago, just lived downtown. So,
And for people who don't know, South Davis County or North Salt Lake County is... pretty Mormon, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty conservative.
It's pretty
sleepy.
Conservative, yeah. Just about 15 minutes north of downtown. Salt Lake is where I grew up, and definitely a conservative. It might, like, rival Provo and Utah County, I think.
Really?
Davis County and Utah County are pretty conservative, I think.
And being a kid that grew up there, family Mormon your whole life?
Yes.
Mom and dad not converts?
Nope. My mom's parents were first gen, but they were kind of in and out, I think. They weren't, like, super active. And so my mom was, like, the first, like, full-fledged member on her side. But my dad had a couple generations back. So,
yeah. So pretty typical for Utah, right? Mom and dad just go every Sunday, expectation to go. Mm-hmm. Boy Scout.
Yeah, well, kind of.
Well, as much as you wanted to, right?
As much as I wanted to, yeah.
I always kind of find it fascinating. So the point at which you went, you know, maybe I'm different than these guys who like girls. Talk to me about that.
It was pretty young.
How old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 29.
Okay.
Turned 30 in just a couple months.
Well, good luck.
Send me a birthday card.
All downhill from there.
Right. Yeah. It was pretty young when I recognized that things were not like the other boys.
Like what, though? How did it manifest itself in you, right? Like, sometimes I'll talk to people and they'll be like, yeah, I thought about girls and I instead was noticing that I was staring at the boy in my class or something like
that. I think the earliest I remember is wanting to hang out with boys because they looked cool. Like, that's the first time I was, like, recognizing that I wanted to be with other people just based off of looks, right? And I mean, at the time I thought it was because they looked cool, but because they were cuter than the others. And so it was pretty early on that I recognized, like, I want to hang out with those people.
How old are we talking?
I don't know, early
like
elementary.
Kindergarten? Okay,
yeah.
So pretty young.
It was pretty young. I couldn't definitely, like, classify it as recognizing my attractions.
Sure.
But I definitely recognized that I was more... I definitely wanted to hang out with the boys for not because they were had shared interests or anything, but because of more of they looked like something that I wanted to be around, right? Okay. I don't know if that makes any sense.
So talk about the genesis of that then. So where to go from there?
I think through elementary school and junior high, it was just becoming more apparent as the years go by that this isn't just wanting to hang out with these people, but as like hitting puberty and the other kids are talking about these girls that they're into and all this stuff, and recognizing like I am not feeling what they're feeling, mm-hmm. and slowly like recognizing that and separating myself and knowing when to not talk or not address those attractions or point those things out and just kind of nod and let the other guys talk, right?
Yeah, which girl do you like? Oh, I like all of them.
Yeah,
they're all...
You know, I'm more interested in personality, right? So, and then through high school, I played this like, I don't believe in love. Love is just this made up thing that people
is jaded.
Yeah. Right. And so, so I played this game with everybody like, oh no, I'm not into love. Like love is a joke and love songs are stupid. And, mm-hmm. and so I played it off by going down that route of
all the while kind of heartbroken on the inside.
A little bit, yeah.
Conflicted, right?
Conflicted because... for sure. Yeah, because I had all of these attractions and I like growing up in the church, definitely felt that I was broken, that I was not doing something right, that I had this big problem that I had to deny, suppress, pretend that wasn't there, overcome, all these things. And so all this time, I was just trying to shut that off, and it wouldn't shut off.
Like a light switch.
Like a light switch, yeah. Right. Yeah, because that works.
Yeah.
Yeah. So struggling through that, but on... outwardly talking pretty, about this like, yeah, I'm just, I don't believe in love, this is just a joke, and on the inside kind of struggling quite a bit. But
relationships at all through high school?
Not really, no. I think I asked one girl to a dance.
Okay.
My entire high school career, and I had a lot of close friends and some like close female friends, but mm-hmm. I never considered them like I had very close relationships with them, but I would tell them like, oh yeah, this is totally platonic, but yeah, they, I don't know, it worked however it was. And then yeah. After college or after high, or my gosh, after my mission,
where'd you serve?
I went to the exotic lands of Louisville, Kentucky.
Well,
yes. After my mission, I started dating one of the of my really close friends from high school.
Uh-huh.
And I
guy or girl?
Girl.
Okay.
I told her before. It, I don't know if you're familiar in like LGBT Mormon world. There's this Josh Weed is.
Sure.
You're
but you can expound because so, a lot of people listening probably don't know.
Right, right. So Josh Weed, he is a blogger and. I don't
married, know. Right?
Married,
as I understand.
He has a couple kids, married to a woman. On their 10-year wedding anniversary, he writes his blog post where he comes out to the world and he says, I'm Mormon, I have children, I'm active in the church, but I'm also attracted to men. Mm-hmm. And as I read this, I'm like, oh, I have hope, right? Like, I can totally marry this, I can totally marry a woman and all will be well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great article and props to Josh for being able to do that, but
it's not for everyone, and people would. There are a lot of people who strongly disagree with that,
right? Yeah. Right, and
sort of divisive, I think, within LGBT Mormon folk.
Exactly. Yeah, but I got all this hope, and so I approached my friend, and I'm like, hey, read this article because like I identify with it, but I also want to give this a shot with you.
And
she was. Awesome about it.
Really?
Yeah. She was really supportive. She would go to these LGBT Mormon conferences. She would read these books. Like she was more into it than I was.
Okay.
Because I was still looking at it as this condition that I had
uh-huh.
and not really owning it and trying to still deny it. And she was just incredible, incredibly supportive. And so we tried doing that. We almost made it a year. Maybe just about the year mark,
mm-hmm.
And then realize, yeah, this is not, this is
what,
not gonna
what
work.
Was it about it that wasn't working? Because it wasn't clicking sexually for you, or like there was sort of that thing from her end where it's like, yeah, but I'll never be enough. Like I've heard both ends of that.
Both of those, I think. Okay. We would talk a lot about that. That I'm not going to be able to ever provide her the needs to the level that she deserves in a companion, and likewise, like vice versa. And so there was a lot of that, like, can we do this? Like, we need to talk about this. And I wasn't ready to. And so I think there was a lot on my part where I'm just like, we don't have to talk about it. Let's just pretend it doesn't exist.
Right.
But all the while, like, it took me almost that whole year just to kiss her. And so on her end, you can imagine, like, everyone's like, why haven't you kissed yet? It's almost been a year and you've been dating and all this stuff, and he's not doing anything. Are you sure he's not gay? And she's like trying to be supportive and not out me, but all that kind of stuff. So it was just
so you get to the air and it's just heartbreaking, I bet.
Well, it was a kind of a mutual decision, like, this is not going to work out. And afterwards, I mean, we're still really close friends and we still do a lot of stuff together. And I think that we ended it at a time where it kind of saved our friendship and our relationship.
Good.
So yeah, it was awesome. So
then what happens? Then you're like, well, the woman thing isn't working.
Yeah. And so I figured, well, I just have to give up because I'll just be this celibate, sad Mormon, or like maybe I'll run away.
When you say give up, you mean give up the church? Do you mean
give up trying to find a relationship?
Okay.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of, well, maybe I'll just try this celibate Mormon thing and be happy being alone for the rest of my life.
Give me context on year. What are we talking? Is this right around Prop 8? It seems like it would be.
So Prop 8 happened when I was on my mission.
Okay.
So it was shortly after my mission. And
so
then,
it's when it's still super messy in the church.
Yeah. And so we broke up, and then I was kind of just like, I'll just be celibate. But then there was a lot in the back of my mind, well, what if I, like, after college, just move away and lose contact with everybody, and then I can live this gay life or whatever.
Mormons will find you, though.
Right. Yeah, they always find you. So I tried that celibacy thing. And
how was that?
Well, I think the hardest part was the constant, like, reminder in the back of my head that I can't overcome this. And I remember driving to work and just thinking, if I don't look out the windows at the people driving by, I won't be tempted to, like, be attracted to people. Like, if I just stop looking at people, it'll be okay. And just, like, this totally asinine train of thought. But that's kind of how it was. I was really pushing this stop being attracted to men.
Right.
And it was tough. But it led me down some dark roads, and I got really depressed because I couldn't shake this attraction. And, you know, I kept praying, like, God, fix me or help me overcome this. Or
literal prayers.
Yeah. Yeah. And lost a lot of sleep over it, shed a lot of tears over it, and just nothing was happening. And about 2014, I was kind of at the end, right?
It's like suicidal,
lost
are we
hope.
Talking
yeah.
about? Okay.
My faith was broken. I figured, okay, God either doesn't exist or he does not care about me, because I prayed for so long, I prayed so hard, and I'm getting nothing in return. And so I'd lost faith, I had lost hope, and super depressed and really discouraged. And so near the end of 2014, I think it was the last Sunday of 2014, or so December of 2014, somebody in my bishopric asked me to give a talk on, like, how do we strengthen our faith in the new year, right? And
surprise, I'm here, Peter.
Yeah.
Hello.
Well, so yeah, so I'm like, well, can I actually not give this talk? And I asked him if I could, like, reschedule to another topic or another day. I'm like, I don't want to talk about this. And he wouldn't let me. And so I write this talk and I get that Sunday.
Now, where are we at? Are we in
Salt Lake
now?
We're in Bountiful still. And my bishop is President Eyring's son.
Okay.
And since it's the new year Sunday, President Eyring decides to show up.
Oh, my
God. And
gosh.
So I have to give this talk with President Eyring in the congregation. And
oh, my gosh.
And it was not, like, the most encouraging talk ever, because I talked about how I was asked to how we can renew renew and strengthen our faith. But for me, I have lost my faith. And so my New Year's resolution is how to find that again. And it was just like a big mess. I was like this ball fest, and it was not good.
Well, defined by your own definition of what was good, my bet is it was incredibly spiritual and so raw and emotional that people were like, oh my gosh. But yeah, you know, and being able to understand what you were saying, it's like, what do you say? I don't know. The spirit's great.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I was like totally in another place because I was just talking about being totally broken down and losing my faith, and I need to find a way to work that out. And that was kind of like how I left the talk, because I couldn't really bear testimony of much. And the following month.
Wait. Does Elder Iring come up to you afterwards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
President Iring, he walks up and he gets up to speak after me. And he's
oh my gosh.
There was a reason why I came this week. And then afterwards, he came and gave me a hug and let me know that he loves me. And it was a touching moment, but I wasn't like really all there, right?
Right.
So I wasn't there spiritually. And so it didn't mean too much to me.
Right. It was a thing that occurred instead of the answer to prayers.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of darkness and whatnot carried on for a little bit longer. And I don't know if I'm giving too much detail.
Nope.
Do you want me to like keep
perfect.
Rambling? Or
nope, it's not rambling.
Okay.
It's getting a feel for who you are.
Okay, because I'm just sharing everything.
Don't worry, we'll get to it.
Okay.
It's the advantage of being able to go a little bit long form. But it gives me and also obviously everybody listening an idea of who you are. And then we're going to take a break here in just a minute, and we'll get into the what you're doing, and then we'll get into the why you're doing it.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
So yeah, now we get an idea of who you are. So you're not just some Yahoo going, hey, I'm going to be on the stage. Come and see me. It's family home evening.
Yeah.
So the darkness continues. Did you ever try and take your life?
No.
I can be so bold as to.
I didn't. I got very close, and I've come up with some like random plans, like this. I could do this. I could do this. I could do this.
So casually planning it, but not ever like, and I've got the knife or
yes,
I've got the pills.
Right. I never carried anything out. So,
okay.
Never attempted anything. I was working at Salt Lake Community College at the time, and one of my coworkers got some tickets to Sundance. So that kind of gives you a frame where we are, just the end of January time,
2015.
And she gives me these tickets. She's, I can't go to this show. Do you want these tickets? And so I went. I didn't know what it was about. But who wants to turn down Sundance tickets?
Right? Nobody.
Nobody. So I take these tickets and I go, and it's a documentary about this activist named Larry Kramer,
okay.
who is a gay AIDS activist from the 80s from New York. And so I'm watching this, and once again, where I was not very receptive to much. And so I left, and I'm like, well, that's an interesting documentary and whatever. But in that movie, or in the documentary, it had clips from a movie that had recently been released called The Normal Heart, which was once a play, which was then a book before that Larry Kramer had written. And then shortly after I left, a couple weeks later, I was at Top Hat Video in Bountiful.
Which is like one of the only rental video shops that still exists.
Seriously.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because all the Blockbusters are gone. All the Hollywood
are
videos are gone. But this, it's still even now,
it's
is
still
in
there.
Existence.
Yeah.
You can rent a DVD.
It might be the only one. But I used to rent movies there all the time, and I was looking at the movies, and I saw The Normal Heart, and I'm like, hey, I just watched the documentary, might as well get the movie. And so I got the movie along with a whole bunch of other movies to like hide the fact that I was buying or renting this movie about gay people.
Like when kids buy condoms at the grocery store, right?
Yeah, they buy a whole bunch of stuff to like
hide it up. I need this Tootsie Roll, and I need this bag of chips and these condoms. And
right.
I also,
Yeah, exactly. Like I rented like Emma, My Story with, like, and then I rented like just the whole spectrum of movies, and
All movies. That's all. That's what I'm trying to prove here. I just like all movies.
Yeah, and then I went home and I locked my door. So I had moved back with my parents. So I locked the door in my bedroom and I was watching this movie on my laptop, like with the volume down, like I was doing something super terrible.
Are you watching Emma, My Story again?
Right? Yeah.
Mom, no, yeah. I swear.
Yes. And like, oddly enough, like this, it was an HBO movie, uh-huh. right? And I was watching this movie and it, as I watched, it was just probably the most spiritual experience I've ever had. That I felt God tell me that I'm not broken, that there's nothing wrong with me, that He created me this way for a reason, and my identity as a gay person is a valuable, sacred part of who I am. And I'm just like watching this HBO movie in tears, and it was just an incredibly spiritual experience. And that was kind of the shift. And that was where, like, everything started to change. And so I learned that I had worth as a gay person, and that I didn't just have a condition, but I had a special, unique attribute that I had to share with the world. And the movie is, he talks about being an activist, right? It's about activism. And I really connected with that, that I need to use my voice as a gay Mormon mm-hmm. to provide hope for people that have been in my shoes. I needed to, be able to speak up and work to create a space in the church for queer people. And, things didn't just happen right sure. away, but I mean, that was 2015, early 2015. And so now we're here. And I mean, there was a lot that happened in between there and now, but I think, I don't know if that kind of lays the
ground.
Yeah, let
me ask you one question, then we'll take a break. How'd your folks take it?
They took it really well.
Good.
Yeah. I was very fortunate. I know a lot of people don't
are not as
quite
fortunate,
have,
especially within the church, for sure.
Right.
How'd you do it?
So I got this pamphlet from the Family Acceptance Project.
Okay.
That it's a pamphlet for parents of LGBT youth, and it's written for LDS families. So it uses like LDS terminology. And I had picked it up. I don't remember where. But
does it say things like he knows with every fiber of his being that he's gay? That kind of thing?
Yeah, something like that.
He knows beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Yes.
Sorry.
My mom was in the office.
Did you get them together? Mom, dad, I got something I need to tell you.
I was actually terrified to tell my dad. So I
that's typically the case. Mom's like, listen, sweetheart.
Right.
And for whatever reason, it seems like some dads identify their masculinity or their ability to have raised a man child correctly,
right?
Air quotes, as to what you know, their sexuality, right?
Yeah, if I'm butch enough, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So I picked my mom first, and I had this book, and I walk up, and her office is at the end of the hallway, if you can imagine. So I'm standing at the end of the hallway holding this booklet. And I'm like, okay, I got to do this. And I sat there for a little bit and I'm like, no, I can't do this. And I went back downstairs and I came back upstairs once I like got enough courage and I stood there at the end of the hallway. And then I went back downstairs and I did this a few times. And finally, I'm like, okay, I just got to go do this. And so I go in and I sit down next to my mom and she's on her computer. I'm like, so I've got some good news, Mom. I've got a couple pieces of good news. And she's like, okay, what is it? And I just kind of stuttered and fumbled and couldn't say anything. And I'm like, well, let me start with the first piece of good news. And so I shared that where I was spiritually, right? That up until recently, my faith was in pieces. I didn't have any direction. I didn't have any hope. Mm-hmm. And so the good news is that my spirituality has been restored and my relationship with God has been strengthened. And I'm kind of on this spiritual high. And she's like, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to hear that. Thank you for sharing. And
she's like, and there's something else.
Yeah, right? And I'm like, which leads me to the second piece of good news. And then once again, I couldn't say it, right? And so finally, I just like handed her the pamphlet and I'm like, just read this. So she takes it and she reads the cover and she's like, okay, What does this mean? And I couldn't say the words that I, like, I couldn't say the words, I'm gay.
Had you practiced it?
No.
Okay.
No, I just kind of went up in there and just gave it a shot.
At the end of the hallway, no. Okay.
Right.
Back up, no.
So she's like, well, what does this mean? And I'm like, well, it means that, I said something along the lines of, it means that you don't have a straight son. Right. And so I said something weird like that then.
Right.
Like, I am not straight, or you don't have a straight son, or something. And she's like, okay.
She's like, that's it? I've known for years. No, I'm just joking. No, I love stories of that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, we know.
Right? It's like, who are you fooling? But no, she was awesome. And she kind of just let me explain things. And she was supportive. And she was great. And she's like, well, have you told anybody else? And have you told your dad? And I'm like, no, I'll get to that. And she's like, okay, well, I'll be there with you when we tell him, and it'll be great. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll let you know when I'm going to make that happen. And
wait, so there was a time duration from mom to dad?
Yeah, because he was at work.
Okay,
and so,
okay.
So I left, like, thrilled that I told somebody. And I think I came down to City Creek Mall, and shortly after that, my mom calls me. She's like, so we got to do this today, because I can't keep this from your dad very much longer. And I'm like back in panic mode because I'm afraid to tell my dad. And
right.
So he got home. I came home and sat him down in the living room, and my mom sat down. I think she played along like she didn't know, like this was new information for her.
What?
But,
acting.
Right.
Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Sweetheart?
Yeah. Hmm? It all went really well, though. So, because I did the same thing. Like, I've got some good news.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of went through that same thing with my dad. And he was kind of quiet and very receptive. And I was worried about the silence. But the first thing he said to me is, well, how can I support you?
Huh.
And
that is so great.
It was
your
awesome.
Parents, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, I'm very fortunate with the parents that I have. Grateful for them. And my siblings were very similar. I then made it kind of a game to like come out to a new person every week. And my siblings were great. And, my sister, one of the things that she said was that one of the greatest things of my life has been a mother and a spouse.
Uh-huh.
And if you stay in the church, you can't have that. And it was nice that
she's a faithful member of the church. Okay.
Yeah. But I thought it was really cool that she was able to recognize the struggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like she was able to see that the path that lay before me is not going to be an easy decision.
Sure.
Right? Like a life of celibacy or finding a companion and the happiness that either one can offer or not have, I guess,
mm-hmm.
It's just not an easy path. And I thought that was really cool that they were able to see that right off the bat.
Mm.
So anyway, that kind of is a little bit of my coming out story.
Yeah, the Mosman family, they know it. They don't know how to pronounce their last name, but they know how to
right.
embrace the love. I'm just teasing. I still can't get past that because it's spelled like Mooseman.
It is.
Let's take a break for a second, and then in the second block, we'll make it fairly short. I just want to get the nuts and bolts of what this thing is that you're doing.
Yeah.
How it went the first round, what maybe you're going to do different, or what we people can anticipate the second round if they want to come out and support you, and we'll do that coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. 1 in 5 children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall here, talking to Peter Mosman about being a local gay Mormon. I appreciate you letting me have a little fun with you as we talk about this. I know it's pretty serious, and I certainly don't want to downplay it. I think the reason why we bring folks like yourself in is further understanding the empathy for people. And hopefully, you know, if people are listening that are not yet parents, they can certainly learn from your folks' example about a way to just unconditionally love for people who don't. Though it seems sort of surprising to me anymore, but those who don't have an LGBTQ person in their life, you know, some insight into what that struggle is for everybody. So, and to hopefully be more loving through it. And I think that that's what you're doing with this event. So you did this on the 15th of July. You're doing it again on the 19th of August.
Yeah.
And it really is, as I read in the press release at the start of the episode, you have built a living room that you move into State Street.
Main
Street, yeah. Right by City Creek Mall.
Yep, underneath the bridge.
Which is, I have to tell you, I was like, smart. He's in the shade. Real smart.
Yeah.
What is that? How did the idea come about? And what do you do with that thing? And how was it received? Tell me all about it.
Okay, let me tell you all about it. So back in April, I decided for General Conference, I decided to carry around a sign around conference that says "Hug a Gay Mormon," and I guess so. With all of these activities that I've done, the idea was to increase visibility, increase empathy and understanding for this unique intersection of identity in the church,
right?
And hopefully, just like build some connection and help people. Like decrease fear, I guess, right? Like people are afraid of the things that they don't know or they're not exposed to.
And for some people, like I said, they just haven't had the experience with a gay person, and certainly not a gay Mormon. So it's like, well, what is this?
Right.
Oh, Peter looks like... There looks like Dave and looks like
kind of normal. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, keep trying.
Normal is relative. But
the glasses, I mean.
Yeah,
but
right. So that was kind of the idea. And so I did this activity walking around the conference center with a sign that says Hug a Gay Mormon. And it was incredibly well received. And the challenge of that, though, was I wanted to create connections with people and I wanted to have conversations with people.
Right.
But like in the second long hug, there's not a lot of conversation that you could have.
Right.
And so I walked away from that thinking, how do I engage with people longer and with greater depth?
Because you can't hug for too much longer. Otherwise, people go. Mm.
Then it gets kind of weird. Yeah. Especially during priesthood session. Right. Yeah. And so I was looking for a way to connect with these strangers that I'd never be able to meet otherwise on a deeper level. And so the idea came up with, what if I did an FHE, like a family home evening? And be doing a family home evening at a venue where people have to like come out of their way to visit. I figured would only attract people that were already sympathetic to the cause. And so I figured I had to find a way to go to where the people are. Right. And so I decided I'm going to take my living room and I'm going to go find them. Right. And I figured the busiest place on a Saturday would be City Creek Mall. And so I decided to set up my living room outside.
Now, is it literally the stuff from your living room?
It's not.
Okay.
It is donated furniture. So
nice.
I did get a couch and my sister donated her area rug and her coffee table.
Cool.
And so It was literally living room, coffee table. I brought out a lamp and a picture of the family.
Nice.
All that kind of stuff.
Prophet in the temple. Did you get those too? You got
well,
to.
Well, I brought out my Ensign.
Okay.
I had my Ensign on the coffee table and the Book of Mormon and Quad. I brought the Quad out and I was ready in case people wanted to like rip into the scriptures that I could say, no, this is why it's okay. But nobody did that. But anyway, so yeah, I literally set up a living room and I mounted to the back of my couch a giant sign that said FHE/Q&A with a gay Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag hug a gay Mormon, because that's what I used for my conference thing. But
people come by?
People came by. Yeah, I was really nervous at first. I was there from essentially 10 a.m. to 8 p.m.
That's a long time.
And I started setting up, and even before I had my living room set up, people were coming and asking questions and talking and trying to figure out what I was doing.
Now, had people known via the press? None of the press stuff had come out until you actually set up or had it.
I made a little Facebook event,
okay,
but really that was it.
Okay.
So I created a Facebook event that week,
mm-hmm,
and put it up on like Mormons Building Bridges and the Utah Gay Men's Network and like affirmation and on my Facebook page. But so I threw it out there and just hoped for the best. And it was incredible. There were so many people that stopped by, and there was just a small period where I was kind of like sitting and waiting. Other than that, it was almost a constant conversation with people that I would be talking to one person and other people would show up. And when I would finish with them, I'd start talking to these other people, or they would kind of just jump into the conversation, or while they were waiting, they would start talking with them, with each other, mm-hmm, about the topic. And so it was just a kind of a hangout space where people were able to talk about the experience of a gay Mormon and whether they know someone who's gay or how they support their friends that just came out. Or it was amazing. So people were coming and I don't know. It was all constructive.
Spiritual?
I did have there were some spiritual moments that people were asking some really sincere questions.
Like,
and
was there maybe one that touched you quite a bit, or also was there a frequent question that came about?
I mean, the most frequent question was, how does this work?
Right. Right?
Like, how do you be gay in a super conservative church that doesn't really allow you to be gay, quote unquote? That was probably the most common, but two of my favorite interactions were, so I was sitting down with this woman and we were having a conversation, and we were having this conversation and I asked her, so have you ever met a gay Mormon before? And she hesitantly says, well, I am a gay Mormon.
Really?
But I've never told anybody before.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was cool just that space allowed her to be comfortable enough to talk about it.
Right.
And she started asking questions like, how did you come out? How did you get the courage to come out? How did your parents take it? What did you say to them? What did they say to you? What did you say to your bishop? And so she was just asking all these really cool questions hopefully gave her some kind of confidence and courage to take that next step for in her life.
Or even hope that it could be all right, right?
Right.
You seem to be really figuring it out, right? And for someone who carries that weight that you described earlier, mm-hmm, on, you know that she's got to carry, you know, some or
right,
just as much or maybe even more, depending.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And to have that hope that it's like, okay, it can be okay.
Yeah. And I mean, it was huge for me, and I hope it was huge for her. Another of my favorite experiences was another woman came up to me, and she starts off, you are literally a dream, or not a dream, not a dream, I am dreamy, but you are literally a prayer come true.
Huh.
And she's like, a friend of mine just came out to me today, this morning,
uh-huh,
and I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know how to be there as a support. And so I was praying all day, like, what do I do? What do I say? How do I support him? And here you are.
Uh-huh.
And so we kind of talked about like what how I wish people would have responded,
right,
and what is I would not recommend. Of course, everybody has their own story and their own experiences, but
sure,
I kind of was able to share mine, and so she was grateful, and it was just a really, really cool exchange. And there were a lot of other stories and experiences that, yeah, I don't know. It was awesome. So,
did you get any hecklers? Any people being belligerent?
Right at the very beginning, there were a couple people that they weren't too extreme or overwhelming.
Right.
A couple of them sat down and they're like, well, let's talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. Let's talk about what
right.
the Bible has to say. And so they start going off on the Bible and what God really wants for me.
Right.
And
what did you do in that case, right? Because you know that's got to be, first of all, it's a fear that that's going to be happening and what you're going to get the majority of. Turns out that it wasn't, which is great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how do you deal with that?
I mean, with the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, it was probably the easiest thing they could have picked out. But there's a scripture, I think it's in Ezekiel, where it talks about it starts off saying, and this is the sin of your system, of your sister Sodom.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on to describe that Sodom was destroyed because of pride and because of
inhospitable
behaviors. Yeah, like refusing to care for the poor and the needy, and just all of these things ultimately relating to pride.
Right.
And that's why Sodom was destroyed. And so I read that scripture and kind of explained it. And one of the guys was, he just looked at me and like nodded, and he's like, oh, cool.
Okay.
I didn't know that before. and he just like stood up and walked off.
Yeah. More, it was a gay thing.
Yeah.
All right.
So he literally just stood up, walked off, and that was that. And the other person that was there, he's like, what does God really want for you? And then I kind of explained what I just shared earlier,
uh-huh.
that I tried for my whole life to overcome this and do what I thought God wanted me to do. But it wasn't until I finally like gave it up to him and said, I am at the end of my rope. I have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you want me to do with this. And that's when I finally found out what he wanted. And it brought me that joy and it brought me that happiness. And I kind of just shared that with him. And you know, he's like, well, if that's what God wants you to do, then that's what God wants you to do. And so that kind of resolved itself. And so the only hecklers or the negative people were, everything kind of resolved itself.
Hmm.
And the rest of the day was awesome. Nobody really challenged anything. Everybody was asking really respectful, sincere questions. And a lot of people would share their experiences of, well, I was raised in the church, but once I came out, it was just too negative. And so I ended up leaving. And so it was nice to be able to have that conversation with them, that
mm-hmm.
One person's like, yeah, I left a long time ago, but I mean, if the church ever changed its views on where gay people fit or the LGBT community fits, I'd probably jump right back in. And,
yeah.
And so it was nice to be able to validate where they were, but also be able to share where I was. And it was a really cool exchange with almost every single person that I talked to that day.
I think your specific situation, I don't want to say it that way. That makes it sound like condition, which it isn't. I admire a great deal your strength of character, because I know that it's not the easy way to be.
Right.
And even further, like, I know that there is sort of this tightrope walk where you go, yeah, the church no longer says, and I remember, maybe not doctrinally, but I certainly remember the kind of unspoken thing of, you know, it's not, you're not born that way. You're,
mm-hmm.
you're conditioned that way. You know, wasn't
yeah.
Adam and Steve. Oh,
yeah.
Anyway, you know, to kind of backing off all of that, right. We don't preach that it's a thing that you can change anymore.
Right.
But that, you know, the only part of that discussion is that it's like, well, but don't act on it.
Yeah.
Which leads to all those celibacy things that you were talking about. And I know for people that that want to have that relationship and but also want to be in the church, it becomes that difficult tightrope walk.
Right.
And I don't think that it's figured out for a lot of people, right?
Right.
And I think that a lot of people in that time before they've sort of figured it out, either their feelings get hurt or it becomes too difficult, or you know, they aren't able to find the hope that you've found. And so for whatever that is, the compliment being, you know, I am one who appreciates those folks who are able to stick around and to be able to say, yeah, I don't know, but, you know, just because I haven't figured that all out doesn't mean I don't believe in the gospel and doesn't mean that I can make a difference from within.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it really is from within that things are able to be changed.
Oh yeah, for sure.
For better, and certainly much more for worse. It seems that we, as Latter-day Saints, once someone has kind of left the church, we just go, "Yeah, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to say that because you left the church,
right?"
But there is a strength that comes from being able to navigate that and being able to stand. I want to ask this question, then we'll take a break and get into the last block of this. Are there things that you didn't do or that you did do, or what will you change for when people can come out and see on the 19th of August?
One of the things that I would like to do is have more identities represented.
Okay.
Right.
Where you're just a gay man, you mean like a lesbian?
Yeah. I think that the conversation is often capitalized by the cis white gay man.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I want to share my experiences, I think that other people have just as valid and just as important voices to and stories that need to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love to create a larger space that can allow for more people to share the couch, right?
Sure.
And share their stories. So I think that would be a goal of mine.
Yeah,
have more space, more chairs and more places to sit down and chat, but also to have more voices represented. I think that would be really important. So,
And it's the 19th of August, which is also a Saturday, going mm-hmm. 10 to 8 again.
Yep.
And it'll be on Main Street by City
Main
Creek Mall.
Street.
Look for the living room setup. And if people wanted to find you or find out about it on Facebook, is that the best place to go?
Yeah. Everybody tells me I should make a Facebook page.
You should.
I haven't.
Yep. Website. There should be something like
there
that.
There should be. I don't. I
his,
haven't. This
his name
up
is
to this
Peter
point.
Moosman.
Yeah.
Moosman.
Yeah.
Contact
Facebook.
Him and help him. Help him make a website. Somebody find
yeah.
him on Facebook.
Well, I think one of the challenges and one of the reasons why I haven't is because I don't want to make this about me,
sure.
right, in my campaign. I want to make it about the movement, right, of carving that space. But since it's kind of me at this point, I don't want it to be like this hug a gay Mormon
right.
campaign.
It's more than that. There's
yeah.
a name in there somewhere that it can incorporate both your experience and the
yeah.
Openness to everybody else.
So that was, I think
Cultural
that was
Hall's
kind of
already
the,
taken. Sorry about that,
okay,
but maybe,
okay. maybe
we can find you something
some
else.
Twist off of that.
Room
but,
on the couch.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll think about
right.
it. Let's take a break then for a second, and then I want to get back and I want to dive just a little bit deeper into your experience, and
okay.
and then we'll wrap this thing up.
Cool.
We'll come back and do that in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. You know, I get a lot of emails with questions from customers, and here's one. Dear Dan, I love to do business at your stores, but I have a lot of Apple and PC stuff. It's too bad because I like doing business with local people. I wish there was a way to make all of my gadgets work together. Signed, Scattered. Dear Scattered, Windows, Mac, Android, we can make all of them sync up for you. Your phone, tablet, and PC. They'll all be one big, happy, diverse family. So Scattered, bring in all your Apple and PC stuff. Now that's comfort and peace of mind. Get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for just $799 with a lifetime parts and labor warranty at any PC Laptops location while supplies last. $799, you can't beat that deal. please visit any one of our locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. It's Peter Moseman. I know I said Mooseman at the end. It's because it's spelled that way. But get in touch with him. Find him on Facebook and reach out. Help him develop a website. People care about this, and we can help more people care about it. It's interesting, too. You know, years ago now, we had a transgender folk person on, and even now I'm stumbling through it. And if you listen to that episode, like, it's so needed, because I was like, I don't even, you know, I want to be sensitive to this. I'm not, you know, biased. I'm not a jerk, but I get so confused in saying him or her, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's, and you can go back and listen to that episode. It's in the mid 100s somewhere, and it's just me fumbling, going, we need to be better. Help me be better. And it obviously, some things have stuck, but certainly not all of them. Peter, where is the future of this going? Not necessarily this movement, right? But, like, do you see in your heart of hearts the church saying, yeah, you bet, come on in?
Yeah, I do. I think...
like Temple, the full on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So after coming out, to myself and to my circle of friends and my family, I did a lot of studying and praying and fasting and just trying to figure out where I fit, right? Mm-hmm. God just told me that I am not flawed, mm-hmm. and I have a purpose. And so I really wanted to find out what that purpose was. And so in that effort and just really trying to figure out where I belong in the plan of salvation as a queer person. Mm-hmm. Constantly, I felt that God was telling me, right, like, there's a bigger picture to this, that we're not at the end here.
Right.
There's more to see, there's more to do, and we're all gonna, like, evolve, and we're all gonna grow in this. And so, to answer your question, like, I wholeheartedly believe that there will be some changes.
Sure.
And I think that one day I'll be able to get sealed to my husband that I don't have yet, but mm-hmm. I will one day.
Right.
That I'll be able to be sealed in my husband for time and all eternity. Mm. I truly believe that. And so it's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And for some people, I think that scares people, right?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, right?
Right. Yeah.
Fear of the change. It's fascinating to me when you put it in the context of, like, blacks in the priesthood, right? Now they'll never get it, right? We can quote the old Mormon doctrine with Bruce R. saying that, you know, African-American people in the original version, that they'll never happen. And it's like, we'll just go ahead and edit that out.
Yeah.
And then this sort of revision, this revisionist where we're like, well, we never said cursed.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe we were racist, right?
We kind of own that now, right?
But they're so, like, I've thought about that. I've mused about the idea. And you know, I don't know what... Luckily, I'm not ever going to be in church leadership, so I don't know how that would work, right? Because you also, I think, have this tremendous backlash from the truly conservative people who go, hey, where is this coming from? And then you have a backlash from people like, so it's almost like a not win from all the people who feel like for years the church persecuted them, and only to have them be like, yeah, come on in.
You're right, right.
So what a difficult thing to navigate that I'm thankful I don't have to.
Yeah, it's tough.
As far as leadership goes, not speaking about homosexuality in general.
Right,
yeah.
But making those decisions and figuring out what the path forward is, like, it's not an easy one.
Right.
But I think that one of the values of the things that we're doing, and I mean, I am more of the on the street talking to people, but I know that there's a lot out there doing other things, mm-hmm. right? You've got these different organizations that are working tirelessly with the church, or like PR and the website, all of these things, the mormonandgay.lds.org mm-hmm. website. So there, people are all working on it from a different perspective. I'm working on it kind of from that guerrilla activist street route.
Right.
But I think that the more empathy that is developed, that the less fear that there is, the faster that can move forward.
Right.
I had a conversation with somebody in my ward not too long ago about like doubt and opposition to current like church standing, all these types of things. And we were talking about personal revelation, and we were talking about revelation from the prophet and what happens when those aren't in line with each other. And she gave a really cool analogy. She said that sometimes God works through, like, speaking of like a farm or something, mm-hmm. sometimes God works through an irrigation system, mm-hmm. and sometimes he lets things rain, right?
Right.
So sometimes he works through the prophet as this irrigation system that's like unidirectional, and it goes through that system. But then when it rains, like, that's personal revelation, and that's little drops of truth that are entering the community at various locations and spreading from there.
Right.
And I think that the more that we're willing to face this like weird space, mm-hmm. and talk about the weird space of where LGBT people fit, that we can find the sincerity and the desire to find out what God actually wants. And instead of basing everything off of fear, we're basing things off of love, and we're asking those questions, and the personal revelation will come, and that will spread, and that will prepare the ground, so to speak, mm-hmm. for that irrigation, that flood, or that big truth to come from the top down, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes
sense.
But I think that's kind of the next step that you were talking about, is just really having those conversations and being courageous in your own circle to kind of prepare the ground, mm-hmm. For what's to lie ahead. So
for whatever reason, as we were talking earlier, and you were sharing the story about meeting with the woman who had not come out, and mm-hmm. you know, repeated several times in my head was that idea of, you know, if it so be that you should labor all your days and bring but one soul. And it hits me. I mean, you know about the dark times that you encountered, and it could be that beacon of light to save a life, to literally save a life. Right now, maybe the doctrine doesn't change in the time that you're alive. Right, maybe your impression is for this celestial thing, and then you're hanging out, and you're like, yeah, wait, you know, however that works out.
Yeah,
or maybe it is. I'm not gonna speculate as to when that would be, but to know that, you know, here and the now, that you're making a difference to the extent of literally potentially saving lives, again, just speaks to the tremendous amount of character that you have. And I hope that in those times that, you know, certainly you didn't make the decision, and now there will never be dark times ever again, right?
Right.
There'll be times it's disappointing, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just hope for everything in the world that, you know, you can cling on to the times that you've really helped people, and share the word, and that those people can buoy you up in the times that they need it, that you need it as well. We ask everyone that steps into the Cultural Hall three questions, so I ask those of you right now. Okay. First one is, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I am part of the Mingle Committee.
Yeah.
All right.
Are you in a singles ward?
I'm in a singles ward.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, and you're in the fun singles ward before everybody gets jaded because you're not quite 30.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just right on the cusp.
Yeah.
But
well, you better hurry and get it done.
I know, right?
Because otherwise, the mid-singles ward.
Get married somehow, yeah.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I think my favorite calling that I've ever had was a Sunday school teacher.
Okay. What would you teach?
Well, that's the challenge, because one of the things that I loved was like taking the topic and finding a new way to present it that we haven't heard a million times. And so I would like to teach the same topics, just maybe through a more, I don't want to say interesting lens.
Yeah.
But, I think that more
from a different perspective,
maybe like tie in more social justice. I think that religion has a really strong and powerful role in social justice movements, and we don't utilize that enough. So I'd like to teach the gospel through the lens of social justice.
It's an interesting proposition.
Yeah.
And then the last question we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith is that it is personal. It's my own. That I, for a long time, was just going through the motions and letting other people kind of control that. But when I had, when I was broken down to nothing and I had to rebuild that with God, I rebuilt that with God. And there were no others that were influencing that. And it, I was just able to build a relationship. And it was just very intimate, very personal, and like one-on-one. And so that's my favorite part about it, that I can own that and it's mine. So, yeah.
And so great about that is people can't dispute it, right?
Right, right.
Because they can't tell you, no, you didn't. It's like, no, pal, I did.
Yeah.
But, well, he wouldn't have. No, I swear.
Yeah.
I know the fruits. Right. I know how the Spirit feels. So,
yeah,
this is mine and you can't take it from me.
I've had a lot of people tell me that, you know, the devil can appear as an angel of light.
But I shook its hand. It was fine.
yeah, there you go.
Jeez. And I love that people do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The little pat on the head. Well, that's great. So the devil probably. Cool. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you for invalidating all of my spiritual experiences.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.